The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. So me and Colin are here on our own today. Don't tune out. We've Caelan Mooney on the way. That's okay. Keen Ward has cried off today, Colin, and I can't complain about him too much because I was at a stag in Dingle a couple of months ago and I lost my voice on the Monday. So Keen is suffering from that loss of voice, whatever he was up to on the bank holiday
weekend. What were you up to for you to lose your voice?
Mouthing, Colin. Mouthing. I'll answer you straight away.
It doesn't matter. We've lost 80% of our listeners now. I know the Keen's gone. So.
Yeah, but it's a listen when they go in, isn't it?
So it doesn't matter. We've got them.
Right, listen, I want to talk about Eugene McGee here first because he's writing in The Independent this morning and he's writing what a load of absolute nonsense he's writing. You wonder how this was even printed because there's an argument out there, Conan, that, and I am 100% behind the argument, that when you have two teams of equal standard playing each other, go out and try and beat each other. Now, this is the problem. And the big problem is, and Tom Cribben explained this to us before, but we knew it anyways, is this double guessing. It's like, I'll play attacking, but I'm not sure if you're going to play attacking. And if you play defensive and I play attacking, you'll beat me. So the two teams end up going, right, I'm not taking the chance, so they both go defensive. Yeah. And it's just like, oh God, it's terrible. It's a terrible, dull game between two teams that don't really need to do that against each other. They could both play attacking. Now, we can understand why they do it, because they're worried. Look what happened with Armagh and Down. Down went defensive in the second half. Armagh tried to continue their attacking. Teams of equal standard. If one plays defensive, the other plays attacking, defensive team will win. The counter-attacking team will generally win. We're all agreed on that. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very strong argument that too many teams are gone conservative. We talk about the odd rule change that might encourage them to go a bit more attacking. But when Carlo, a Division 4 team for as long as I can remember, like down towards the bottom half of Division 4, when they get a great win against Wexford and then they play the best team in the country, arguably the best Dublin team of all times, going for three in a row in the championship, can we really criticise Carlo for going defensive against the team rather than be beaten out the gate? It was 8-5 at half time. Yeah. I was there at the game thinking, are Carlo great for making this some bit interesting after us coming over to it? Now, listen, it wasn't pretty, but I was more interested in that than if there were 15 points down at half time. Sure, obviously, it's a game, it was a contest. How can Eugene McGee say things like, he called it imitation football. Carlo's imitation football, the sincerest form of fallacy. That was the headline. And he says, that was Carlo's approach. Limit the damage, but forget about winning the game.
What was Eugene, his tactic to win the game?
Eugene, they had no chance of winning the game, mate. This is lose by 20 or lose by, what's it, lose by 12? By 25 or lose by 12.
They gave themselves the best chance of winning the game the way they did it. Like, they had 3 points in it at half time, 4 before Brendan Murphy got sent off. The way they played gave themselves the best chance, not even like lose by whatever amount. They probably thought, if this really comes off, if we get lucky, if they get a man sent off, which Connolly should have got sent off as well, and we'll get into that later, but like, you know, if things had went their way, who knows, that was their best chance of winning, not going out and take, what was his idea of going out to win the game?
I don't know, like, I mean, he's fighting the wrong fight here. Like, I mean, like I said, there is an argument to be made, but this is definitely not one of them. Fair play to Carlo, and Carlo used tactics. Carlo did you know, pack their defence. Everybody talks about that, and this is called well organised. I don't think it's well organised. I think you're just putting so many bodies back there. You've strength in numbers, and you can split. You might have many extra players. You've got 6 forwards back and 2 midfielders, so you have 8 extra players. So you have 4 on one side and 4 on the other. It's not brilliant organisation to just pack them in there. I don't think. But, like, I mean, that's how they played. They had Brendan Murphy playing midfield, who was drifting into the full forward line. So you could see on a couple of occasions where they defend in numbers, then Brendan Murphy drifting the full forward line, and they used to try and hit long diagonal balls to him. Now, they just weren't good enough to be able to execute this properly. But they had a game plan, and they tried to bring it to Dublin, and they were 8-5 down at half-time, and that's an awful lot better than a lot of teams are against Dublin. Most teams are run out of gas against Dublin, and Dublin kick on in the last 10 minutes. We saw against Tyrone in the league. We saw it against Kerry in the league down in Kerry. That Dublin kick on against the best teams in the last 10-15 minutes, and that's what they did against Carlow with 14 men. They kicked on in the last 10 minutes and knocked on a few scores. Fair play to Carlow. Absolutely nothing wrong with how you played the game, and more power to you. That's my take on the way Carlow. And I have to say, the atmosphere around Portlaoise for this game, I gave out a lot last year that the game was sent to Nolan Park. Very interesting enough, the stand wasn't even full. So yeah. What about all these Dublin season ticket holders that were being pandered to the year before in Nolan Park? The stand in Amore Park wasn't even full. So let's stop this owl nonsense that you have to pander to Dublin season ticket holders. Like, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. The main street in Portlaoise Conham was closed off. There's some pictures doing the rounds on Facebook. One of the pubs took some pictures from the second story of the pub. Unbelievable stuff. They had a ban down in the bottom of the town. The whole main street was cut. Traffic was blocked from going down there. It was blue with Dublin supporters singing, dancing, having the crack.
Yeah.
Great atmosphere around Portlaoise. The Dublin fans bring something brilliant. And like, Jesus, wouldn't you love more of that? And even forget about the semi-finals in Leinster being played there. It's brilliant to see Kildare and Meath being played on O'Connor Park. That'll be a brilliant atmosphere and a really close game. Like you said recently, instead of a half empty Croke Park, which would be terrible, I'd bring Dublin and Westmeath versus Offaly. I'd bring that to a provincial ground as well, and let another town experience that atmosphere that Dublin can bring.
Yeah, and I'm sure Dublin fans would prefer it that way.
Of course, yeah. Like,
they're only walking up the Croke Park. It loses its glamour. They're getting spread out amongst 80,000 seats. It's not fun. When you remember going to games as a kid, or even when you get older with your family, like, you remember these trips to these little towns and like the crack and getting a burger and all this nonsense.
Yeah.
But you're all meeting up and you're going together to the game in this blue. I always remember that story when Derry played Dublin and Clonus, and like, Derry don't really travel well, and we were thinking, we might have more people this week than Dublin might, like, and we might actually be in the majority of supporters. Turned around the corner, the place was covered. You know, that hill in Clonus, absolutely blue. And I was like, alright, we were actually about 5% of the supporters that day. Dublin fans like travelling, they just never get the bloody opportunity to just...
They do, yeah. No, there's no doubt about that, and that definitely needs to be pointed out, that Dublin don't mind travelling and they don't mind standing. They'll go anywhere. They'll go to Dr. Cullen Park.
They'll
go to Dr. Cullen Park and be happy about it. Now, I want to talk about the McConnelly incident here and get it out of the way. I don't really know what to say about this, because to me, I watched it in real time, and I was sitting with two fellas at the game, and none of the three of us even mentioned this incident. We all saw it. It didn't even come up as a talking point amongst the three of us. It looked like a bit of a flashpoint. The more serious thing was the three Carlow players manhandling Connolly and roughing him up. And he got a lot of harsh treatment right throughout the day. Connolly looked completely disinterested in the game, to be honest with you. He was out around the fringes, you know, outside this blanket defence, trying to get on ball. And there was nothing really working for him. And he was being well man-marked. And then this flashpoint came, and it looked like it was a Dublin ball. And then the three Dublin... Well, Connolly shouldn't have held on to the ball. And then he goes and he gives the the linesman a little push. Now, pointed at him as well. So, listen, under the letter of the law, Connolly's probably going to get a suspension from this. Yeah. To me, it's not the end of the world. But then again, we can't give out about Davy Fitz coming in on the pitch and causing scenes, and then say that it's okay for maybe the highest profile Gaelic footballer in the country to push a linesman, if that's not a great example to be setting either. So, like, look, to me there was nothing in it. The linesman didn't even flinch, didn't even call the referee's attention, nothing. Nobody really cared. But the optics are not good, and for that reason, Connolly's probably going to get suspended for it.
Yeah, I don't think he really has an excuse, really. Like, I'd actually blame the linesman there for not bringing it to the referee's attention. I don't know what he's up to. I mean, even like we bang on about it, it's a stupid rule, but remonstrating with the official supposed to be a black card before he could even laying a hand on him. Like, so I'm wondering why. Like, I'd be worried. I'm sure it won't happen that way, but I'd be worried that somebody will look at that and say, wait, well, that was dealt with in the game. Like, it will come under that rule where it's like, well, it was dealt with, the official didn't say anything to the referee, it wasn't logged, so carry on. Like, that's a concern. But I'm sure he'll, like, if Kieran McGeaney's getting 12 weeks for saying something, did you
verbal,
recall them?
Verbal abuse, yeah. It's minor physical interference. Now, there's no way you can argue that it wasn't minor physical interference. Now, this is the technicalities of it. So, like, I mean, I can't see any situation where he's not in trouble with the authorities, because it's a minor physical interference, and if they're following the rules, he's in trouble. my argument is let's sometimes you don't have to follow them to the exact letter. Like, there wasn't much in it. The linesman made nothing of it. The bigger issue for me was the flashpoint beside it, because that was three players manhandling one. Why does some linesman barely being touched in the chest escalates this much bigger than what happened with the players? I thought what happened with the players roughing each other up and three Carlo players roughing Connolly up is worse than why does the linesman become royalty that he's so much more important than Dermot Connolly?
Because what's happening with the players is like a natural part of the game. It happens all the time on the field anyway, but also then when he's holding on to the ball, the players, like, it's an unwritten rule, you have to go get that ball as quickly as possible and do whatever it takes to get that ball within 2 seconds. Him going over to the referee or the linesman and touching him is not natural. He doesn't need to be there. There's no reason to be even talking to the linesman, never mind pushing him, putting a hand on him. Do it with the players. It's basically the players who are pushing you, or the players who are holding the ball. But it's like the difference between a punch and a kick in the rules is something like a punch is like a natural reaction to something, whereas a kick is just, you thought about it, it's deliberate, it's not something you do out of instinct. You actually think about doing it. So putting your hand on a linesman, it's just stupid. I don't think there's any real cover up, and you know how much I love Jim.
Well, I was just going to say that I'm playing devil's advocate there, though. Obviously, you can't. Obviously, referees and players are a completely different ballgame. So, if Dear McConnelly is not being defended by Conan Doherty, there's a good chance Dear McConnelly is in a bit of trouble here. There's no doubt about that. But I just thought the reaction then again last night in the Sunday game for Spillane and O'Rourke, and like, I don't think Spillane and O'Rourke hammered Connolly that hard at all. I thought they were like just pretty reasonable with it, saying that he has a temper. If you poke him, you'll probably get a reaction. We've said this 101 times. There's no doubt about that. Cribben talked about it last year. And then this whole targeting thing, we're not going to start the same narrative about targeting as we did last year. But I thought they were fair enough. And they said it's a minor physical interference. There's not a huge lot in it. And then you look on Twitter and you've got Dublin fans saying, oh, witch hunt against Dear McConnelly. And like, Jesus, it's not a witch hunt this time. Like, I mean, it's hard. It's like, I've sympathy for him. Because, like, I mean, it's not like the linesman is down holding his bloody face and he's after getting a slap. It's a 3 month ban is a lot for something like that. But, like, you know, if that's what it is, that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know?
I definitely say it's a lot, but like, it's the same. The Kieran McGeaney's is far too much. Like, but they have to change the rules, and now, like, unfortunately, because of the extremities they went through with McGeaney, they'll have to do it with Connolly, if not more. Like, he should have taken the black card, like I said on Thursday. He should have just got a black card, missed next week's game or the semi-final.
Yeah, he nearly got a black card in the game. He got a yellow instead. I'd say he was just whispering to the ref, go on, a black, I'll take a black. Anyways, Bernard Brogan, a nice little stat from Bernard Brogan. Ewan McKenna had it there. Congrats to Bernard Brogan, he tweeted. He says he's in his 11th season, his 51st appearance, he has 10 Leinster titles. And he just scored his first championship point outside Croke Park on Saturday night, which is gas. It's only his second ever game outside Croke Park. Laois, of course, being the incredibly brilliant defensive team they are, held them scoreless last year in Nolan Park. So Bernard got his first point outside Croke Park, which I'm sure meant an awful lot. I've scored more in the championship outside Croke Park than Bernard Brogan. How about that, Conan?
I can see the headlines now.
Absolutely delighted with myself. Yeah, sorry, Bernard. Yeah, you've got a slight edge on me in Croke Park, but I've actually scored more from play than you outside Croke Park. Pretty happy with that one. Kieran McGeaney's record as manager, it doesn't make for good reason, Conan. Really, really doesn't. He's got 3 Ulster championships now in his 3 year, obviously 3 years, 3 Ulster championships, no wins. He's only got 1 win in a championship game, and that was against Wicklow in 2015. This has taken over a team that were in an All-Ireland quarter-final in 2014 against Donegal, and arguably should have beaten Donegal that day, putting in an outstanding performance. Like, Jesus Christ, I don't know what's going on here, because I talk to people and say, geez, Geezer, you know, he's a really good manager, he's a great players man, all this kind of thing. The marriage between Kieran McGeaney and Armagh, while they both might be good, they're not good for each other, clearly. Like, because there's no logic to this. Like, this record cannot stand up to any scrutiny. It's terrible. They were terrible at the weekend. So, like, I mean, I don't really know what to say about this, that unless Geezer gets an unbelievable run in the qualifiers this year, I can't see Geezer staying in Armagh any longer. That record is just too poor. This is not a knee-jerk. This is over 3 years.
Can you see them getting a good run in the qualifier? I don't know. Like, as much as you're right, that the record's not, it's nowhere near good enough, but how good is that Armagh team, really? I think Steve McDonald has talked him up a lot more.
He sold us a pup here,
yeah,
so he did.
I mean, like, you do look at it. I know they were top scorers, but they were top scorers in Division 3. They didn't get out of Division 3, however unlucky they were. They didn't get out of Division 3. I just don't know how good a team that is. Like, the forward line isn't all that Stevie cracked it up to be as well. We should definitely challenge him on it on Thursday. The back line, like, Charlie Vernon, like, he's not a fullback, and he was taken to the cleaners yesterday for the first whatever amount of minutes before they finally relieved him of his duties on as at Harrison. He was working. Like, I just don't know what really we can expect from this Armagh team. But I would worry that, I hate when I see management teams sort of going through these different phases of trying different things, and, like, you know, maybe it's healthy in that, but I remember saying at the time, why weren't they attacking last year if they had such good attackers as we're led to believe? Like, why didn't they do that last year? Just completely, drastically changed the game from 2016 to 2017, and unfortunately it's the same results.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's no doubt about that. Their full forward line was very, very poor. Campbell and Clark were a major disappointment. Grugan was a major disappointment, and O'Neill was too, for lads that Stevie had talked up so much. So I don't know. Like, I mean, like, if these are as good of players as Stevie McDonald says they are, well then, they're not getting the best out of themselves, or, you know, they weren't tactically aware enough, because, like, repeating myself from the start of the show, that if you play an attacking style and you don't flood that middle third, you're going to get hit on the break.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. And then, kind of, if they did their homework on down, they would know what way down are going to set up. They would be able to change it even mid-game, because down went very defensive in the second half. So then you're on the sideline, you're going, ooh, hang on a second now, down have gone rightly defensive. I think if we don't flood, you know, our half back line and you know, keep our eye out for that counter attack, we could get hit by Mooney and these fellas on the break. And I didn't see them doing that mid game. They kind of just stuck with what they had come up, because they're getting, like you said, all these scores in Division 3. Like, I mean, this is a completely different level to Division 3.
And it did, like, not to completely criticise Division 3, but it looked like, yeah, like, there was no real plan for Armagh. Almost like they hadn't needed a plan up until this point. Like, it was just kick the ball forward, Murnan will try and, like, something will stick to it, something will happen. There was no real methodical approach that I saw. And it was kick the ball in, and then once down, like, it was actually only working because down were a bit pants at the back line. Like, they were all over the place in the first half.
And you have to remember, they had a strong wind, so they were able to move that ball on a lot quicker than what you normally would against the wind. So that was completely misleading as to what kind of level they were at as well. That was a strong wind.
They got 4 points. They got a goal from a ball that broke, and then they ended up getting a rebound from it. Another goal from, like, again, terrible defending. I mean, no way Shields should be getting through with two or three bodies there and just hammering the ball down the middle of the net. That was awful stuff to see, like, especially for an Ulster man to watch that. But yeah, I'd be very worried. Like, I don't know what sort of level Armagh are at. They don't look to be anywhere near good enough to be competing for Ulster any game. Like, maybe for Mana and Antrim, but they look to be one of the weakest teams there.
Definitely. I don't, and we'll talk about that little game a little bit more. Not that little game, that game a little bit more in the second half. Just quickly before we move on into that, Colin, I want some weird comments thought from Keane O'Neill. Now, let's talk about that game, because Leash were just blown away. I saw some comments that Peter Creedon said he was disappointed in his players. It was on Midlands 103, tweeted it out. Now, he said in the Sunday game he was disappointed for his players, and I've read and also in print that he said he's disappointed for his players. So I'm not sure, was he misquoted there? Because I said, if he's saying he's disappointed in his players, Peter, you need to take a look in the mirror. So I don't actually want to comment on him saying disappointed in, because all I saw that was in a tweet. I didn't see him saying that anywhere else, so I'm going to give him a break on that. But Creedon's record for Leash so far has been absolutely deplorable, and there's no hiding from that. When we talk about Geezer, this is relegation to Division 4 and an awful hiding to Kildare, who are big rivals. So, like, I mean, that's just embarrassing. But Keane O'Neill said something interesting after the game, and he says, if you look at who was out there today, 10 of that team weren't available last year, and that to me is the biggest difference. The other thing is they have a year under the belt with the system that we're trying to play. Well, no, they don't have a year under the belt with the system you're trying to play, Keane, because you played really defensively last year. You, like, everybody is in agreement that the game against Wexford and the game against Westmead were horrific games to watch. This year, you've clearly changed things a little bit. Maybe you changed them a little bit against Mayo up in the qualifiers, played a little bit more attacking that day. So I don't think they have another year under the system.
10 of them don't either, according
to him. But this is the interesting thing. If you look at who is out there today, 10 of that team weren't available last year. Right, so I had a look at the Mayo game last year because I'd know a lot of the Kildare players. Like, and like, I know if there's 10 players that are new faces. So of the team that played against Laois yesterday, 11 of them played against Mayo last year in the qualifiers. Like, it was only O'Grady, Paul Cribben, who was actually injured, Slattery and Daniel Flynn, who wasn't there either. So like, they were all there last year. Like, there's no point in saying anything else. There were pretty much 11 of the team against Mayo. But maybe then I thought, right, he must be talking about the Leinster Championship. So I had a look at against the team against Wexford, and 8 of the team played against Wexford. So he's getting a little bit closer, at least, to his number. And 8 of that team played against Westmead. So there's no doubt there has been a bit of a change. There's been very little change from the Mayo game. So I think as Kildare went on in the championship last year, he started learning a little bit about his players and learning. So towards the end of last year against Mayo, now Mayo away is a difficult game anyway, so there's no shame in saying, yeah, it's pretty much the same team as we played. No, but 10 players there weren't there last year. I don't know why you need to throw that out there. Like, I mean, I don't know, as if trying to write off as an excuse what happened last year, you know, that kind of way. I think Keane O'Neill made a lot of mistakes last year in the systems that he was playing. He lost to Westmead when he never really should have lost against Westmead. So let's just take that on the chin, Keane, and come back this year with a better team, and you're doing really, really well. You know what I mean? Kildare are a good team to watch. They've good young players, and we're all both on record here for saying that if any team's going to challenge Dublin in the next 5 years, it'll be Kildare.
It sounds like you're just a bit pissed off that he sent you on some wild goose chase on your bank holiday Monday looking for these 10 players.
Well, I don't like having to cross-reference teams. You're right, Conan. That wasted 30 minutes of my morning getting these teams, cross-referencing the players against players. So yeah, Keane, you're in my book for having to prove you wrong in that 10 players.
Did you check the league? And maybe he was on, like you said, last year. He didn't say last summer. Like, you know, maybe he was on from the start of the
listen,
league.
Don't even get me started here now. It's 11 versus Mayo. That's all I'm saying. 11 of the players who played against Laois played against Mayo. But Keane says 10 new players played that weren't there last year. All right, we'll have to leave it there, Conan, because Caelan Mooney is on the line now after the great win against Armagh yesterday. Caelan, it was 25 years since Down beat Armagh. That must have been a record you wanted to lose.
Yeah, well, funny enough, there on the site, mate, Shane and Eamon brought that up, saying it's been 25 years since we beat Armagh, and it sort of gave you that extra incentive to sort of win. But again, having home advantage against a local neighbour, like, you're going out with your best foot forward, and you want to put down a marker to the rest of the count or to the country. And I feel like we played to our potential in patches, like, but we needed to rectify it and spring it on a bit for the next round.
Yeah, you had a great start to the game. It looked like you were really fired up because, like, I mean, you were being written off right throughout the country against a team that couldn't get out of Division 3. So, like, I mean, that must have stung you.
Yeah, to be fair, it's still something that's sitting on a lot of our tongues, like, as to why Armagh were being blown up ahead of us. Like, we were playing... Well, last year when I left the pub, we were in Division 1 and got relegated to Division 2, but still Armagh went from Division 2 to Division 3, and yet they went into the game favourite. So I don't understand where that was coming from, and obviously the boys were a bit annoyed, being like, as to why they were being put favourite ahead of us. But again, you don't read into that too much. You just go out and do what you do. We knew what we could do, and obviously it performed yesterday, and we got over the line.
Yeah, would you describe your year so far? Because, like, I mean, halfway through the league, there was all sorts of talk about lads leaving the panel, you're on a 14-game losing streak, and then all of a sudden you beat Meath at home and you survive in Division 2, and now you've had a good win. So, like, I mean, it's hard to know where, you know, has the corner been turned?
It's hard to say. Like, it's like going on the stats of this last year and a half, I say, with the losing streak, the corner's been turned. But we, like, get into the Fermanagh and Clare game, like, we're obviously confident we're going to win, but we just didn't perform, and then we got a change of personnel against Meath, and everything sort of fell together. And in the Galway Kildare game, we were in the game for a long period, and then we switched off for maybe 5 minutes, and both teams scored 2 goals in that sort of period of time. It sort of knocked the wind out of us, and it was hard to come back from, but I'm sort of glad to see yesterday when Armagh scored their two goals. We didn't drop the head, we pushed on, and everything sort of went the direction that we were hoping for.
What are you saying amongst each other when you're on a 14-game losing streak?
You're sort of going out and you want to prove people wrong, because we're being written off like to the stage of it was actually cruelty, the amount of negative publicity we were getting, and it sort of gives you that incentive. You just want to go out, and it's not even for everyone around, it's for the players themselves who want to do themselves a bit of justice, to be like, we're not as bad as everyone's saying we are. And I think that night against Meath we came out and sort of blitzed them, and then again the week after against Derry. But I think it's a team in building, like there's a lot of young players about, and you just have to take it step by step from there. You can't get ahead of yourselves after one winning the championship.
Yeah, what about your own form, Caelan? You got a point very early in the game, a hand pass point, and you celebrated it. That's not, you don't usually see lads celebrating hand pass points, but that obviously showed that you were really up for that game.
Yeah, well, for myself, I was just wanting to get in the scoreboard, but for it to happen so early, it came from a turnover from Armagh, so you just want to celebrate it to sort of let them know that we're up for this and we're ready to go. And it got the crowd involved too, so
yeah,
that was just a. And to be fair, like you're at half back, you're just happy to get any sort of score you can take. So I was just celebrating. I think that was my first point in the Ulster Championship, so I'll celebrate it and enjoy it.
Yeah, fair play to you. And come here, are you a happy wing back now? Because you were a forward at underage. Then you played midfield for Down against Derry in your only other Ulster Championship match. So, like, I mean, are you just kind of getting used to this wing back position, or have you got experience there?
This is my first year being thrown in there, like, but I don't mind it. I enjoy it. To be fair, you sort of look at halfbacks now as more of a sort of an attacking forward from deep.
Yeah,
because of the way Gaelic football's gone. But here, you just wherever you're put, you have to get used to it. And I went well throughout the league, and then I got injured, and it sort of set me back. I had a sort of doubts in my head, as if to say I'd be ready for Armagh, but I feel like I played my part yesterday, and hopefully get another couple of weeks to get ready for either Cavan or Monaghan.
Yeah, but it is true though, for players with your type of speed and, you know, your ability to break the modern game, like it's pretty much the only position for you really. And they actually put shields on you because they were clearly worried about your attacking threat as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's too often you'll see a defender being man-marked, but
no.
Here, I'll take that in my stride. And he scored 1-1, like his goal. Like, I just got the look of the green, and it fell his way, and far ahead of him, he took his goal when it happened. But I was on a warpath after it to try and rectify it, and I feel like I added a couple of crucial scores when we needed them, and just get us over the line and played a bit of defence. So in the second half, I don't think he had the impact, so I'm all around happy enough with my performance in that aspect.
Yeah, no, you can't get blamed for the goal. That just happened to break for him. It would be harsh to blame yourself for that one.
Aye, but I'd take that. I'm a harsh critic of myself, so I'll go away as of how to rectify that and not let it happen again. So,
come here, listen, you dropped off the panel last year, Caelan. You dropped off the panel by text as well. I was reading you said it was a rash decision.
It was sort of a rash decision last year. I wasn't having a great year. I had a lot of stuff going on off the field that just wasn't me, and I got back this year, and I just wanted to prove a point to people that were writing me off to say that since I came from Australia, nobody's really said that I was a real dominant player for Down. Like, so I wanted to get probably my own personal ability through to the people that were writing me off, and I just I really pushed it hard in the gym doing all. It's not even weights and stuff, it's just more the prehab to get myself ready, because I've had hamstring injuries after hamstring injuries, so I need to really rectify this to make sure this doesn't happen again, and I feel like I'm in the right place now to really springboard my career on.
Yeah, is there a lot of pressure on you when you come back from Australia that you're like the great white hope that's going to turn fortunes back around? You know, when you probably need a little bit of time to adjust back into life yourself anyways, you might not need that pressure.
I know, the hard thing for me was Marty coming home and getting down to an All-Ireland final like that.
Yeah.
you know, if you don't win in All Ireland, then you're not going to be worth in money anyway. But I'm just happy to build. Like, I'm only 24. Like, it might seem old, but I've still got a couple of years left in me yet. Like, so I just build on what I've done this year and keep springboarding this year. This season isn't over yet, obviously, but we'll just see wherever we can take it, because with a young team there, with a committed team yesterday, it showed yesterday when obviously Kevy took one to the team with the backyard, but a bit of a scuffle started, but everyone in a down jersey was in, as for Armagh, but it was good to see that sort of commitment, because you can sort of question sometimes if county teams have that feel, you know, as a club player, obviously it's one in, all in, so it's good to see at county level that as soon as one in, everyone came in and defended each other, so it shows a good unity between the team, and again, it's just an excitement just to be through the semi-final of Ulster.
Isn't it actually gas, Caelan, the narrative that a lot of pundits and media will have about a skirmish like that, as in they'll say, oh, that's terrible, it's a blight in the game, it looks awful, whereas players would look at that and go, we all stood up for each other, you know, we're proud of each other for not standing down. Isn't it weird, the difference, how both kind of sections look at it?
Exactly, like you would look at that there if you were going to do, we'll probably do a review of the game on Tuesday, and you'd be looking and see if anyone didn't go in, because that would be pointed out to say, why didn't you go in to defend your teammates? Like, so people on the outside looking in say, that's not good for the game, but on the inside, it just shows I want to win, and everyone's there for each other, and everyone's willing to do anything to make sure we get the win. Like, so I was delighted to see it, because I was in the scuffle myself. I was kind of thrown on the ground a few times and a few sneaky jabs, but had a few boys in for having my back, and I would have my back for any of the boys. And at this stage, I would do anything for the boys to make sure we just get the win, and I'm sure a lot of boys in the down team would say the exact same.
You'll be well used to those rooks from the Aussie rules, though, right?
Oh, don't talk. At least over there, when you're being pulled down like Kevin McCann, that's a good tackle over there. But over here, you get criticised for it. But I think it, all being it doesn't look good on the TV. But at the stage of the game, it's the smart thing to do just to make sure you slow them down. I think that scuffle suited us more than it suited Armagh, because we were in the driving seat at that stage. So.
No, you're right. No, it did. It completely suited you better. So there was no reason for you to calm it down. Come here, talk to me quickly before we let you go about Australia. How did you get on over there? You lasted a while out there, and you got a contract after your rookie contract, and then you gave it up. Why did you give it up?
I probably could get criticised for this, but I just honestly felt like I wasn't being given a fair crack. I was playing really well in the seconds, and the coach in the first just wasn't giving me my fair go, and it actually wasn't even coming just for me, like, because, you know, players, like, they all think they're playing better than what they are, but
yeah,
I had my development coaches and all saying as to, I don't understand to why you're not playing, so I was like, there's no point in me being here if I'm giving my all, moving country and changing my whole lifestyle just for this, if I'm not being given a fair go where I can come back and play Gaelic football to where my roots were grown, and something I really love playing. So I was like, this isn't worth it. Like, you can take the money into it, but that money doesn't bring happiness. Like, so, like, victories like yesterday brought me, I can't say I've never been as happy, but it's very close to the happiest sort of moment in my life, just that final whistle going, all the boys getting around each other, and it was a great feeling. So that there sort of lured me home. It took me 2015 I played against Derry. It's now 2017, so it took 3 years to get that victory, and it was a brilliant feeling, and I can't wait to get the train on Tuesday night, because I'm sure there'll be a good sort of buzz about the camp this week.
Yeah, no, that's nice to hear. I was reading you said you didn't enjoy playing the sport, the Australian rules.
Yeah, to me, like, people criticise Gaelic for the defensive side, but I love playing Gaelic. Even if you're on a losing side or a winning side, Gaelic football is Gaelic football. Like, you get what you're given. You have to deal with the circumstances that come. If people are going to play defensive or attackive, it doesn't matter. But Aussie rules, it's pretty much a one-trick pony. Like, I would call it professional kick and catch. Like, it has its structures to it. Like, but in that aspect, I didn't enjoy it. You feel sort of robotic playing it, because you have to be in this position, you have to be here for structures and stuff, whereas in Gaelic,
right,
you're playing off your own mind, like, you're playing where you think you should be, whereas instead of being told where you have to be, I think that's where Gaelic football has it's more positive than Aussie rules.
Right, okay. And where did you play in Aussie Rules? I think it was you were a half forward, were you?
Yeah, I was playing some small forward. Like I didn't do too bad. Now I'm a defender. I played defence for a while and then got switched back to the forward line. Just, I don't know why, but here, like it happened this year. I thought I was a forward this year, but now I'm a defender. You just have to take it as it comes.
Yeah, yeah. And come here, you spent another couple of summers, or was it just last summer in New York? So, like, I mean, have you kind of settled down in your life now that, you know, the kind of moving around is gone and you want to play football? Or if Down lose the next round, you might head off again for the summer?
No, I'm definitely here for the summer. Like, you've sorted boys at the age of maybe the early 30s, late 30s, saying, I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that. I don't want to be that person. I want to go and experience, being like, I know I haven't missed out anything, so
yeah,
I can say I've done that, been there, done that. But for now, I'm hopeful that Down isn't out for the stage of the sanctions then over in America, so that I can't go. But I'm definitely not going this summer, that's a guaranteed fact. But I can't say that I'm never going to go back again, because it's an experience you have to live. And for now, I'm just happy where I am, and I'm confident that Down shouldn't be knocked out for that stage if we just play to our potential and keep things moving the way they're going.
Yeah, because if any county can get on a roll, it's Down, right? And I'm sure that gives you confidence, the history that Down have, that when they get on a roll, they're very hard to stop and they gain this momentum and the crowd gets behind them. And I'm sure every Down team knows that history very well and can maybe feed off it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at 2010, there was no buzz as to where the team could go, and it went to an All-Ireland final. I'm not saying now that we can get to an All-Ireland final, but we finally get over that hurdle of getting that first Ulster win. You got the momentum in the competition, and you just don't know where it can lead you to. You've got now a couple of weeks to get boys back who's coming from injury, and myself, the two Johnsons and Peter Curley, just to get them, well, to get ourselves into real tip-top shape. And we'll watch next week's game with a real close eye in the semi-final as to where we can expose either team. And like you say, it's you can't write it off, but it's all about if you perform in the day. That's just like any championship football game. If you perform in the day, then you're going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, well, listen, best of luck in the semi-final, Caelan, and great to see you back in top form.
Brilliant, thank you very much.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens, yeah. and it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, and look, he didn't lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, back in club and county.
Yeah, we'll start with Dublin and Carlo Conan here. I'm not sure, I see, we talked about, you know, Carlo doing themselves justice and not disgracing themselves and keeping a score down. Couldn't really learn much about Dublin, let's be honest, because it was that kind of game where, you know, it was so defensive. It's hard to know what Dublin can take from it. You know, they had a lot of new faces in there. Conor Cunningham was up to nothing.
It's tough, in fairness.
It's tough for him, yeah. He played centre half forward, actually. He didn't play on the edge of the square like you might have thought. Maybe that was to get him into the game. And it was interesting that Jim Gavin took, you know, plenty of forwards off, but didn't take him off. So I'd say he just doesn't want to affect his confidence, because apparently he's going well in training. Kieran Kilkenny to midfield was an interesting enough one. He scored 3 points. You know, he played pretty well. Kieran Kilkenny is well practiced at this kind of game, because Castleknock play like that. So he kind of knows. Do you know what I mean? Like, he takes too much out of the ball at times, but against a really defensive team like Dublin, the kicking game isn't really on, and Kieran Kilkenny seems to thrive on this hand-passing game.
Yeah, well, Yeah, like, I think you're right. I mean, your big rant about him last year, about, you know, clocking up the possessions, I don't think that's what he's thinking at all. But I think a big part of him getting a lot of possessions is because he is hand passing and it's coming back to him. He's not actually moving the ball on a lot more. But I mean, you can't deny his energy levels are incredible. Like, you can't, you see it even with Castle Knock, but like, you can't get a hand on him. He's always free, he's always moving, and he is linking the play so much. Like, and him going to midfield was probably better, because I was getting a little bit fed up seeing him at half forward, and seeing what he had done a couple of years ago when he burst onto the scene. He was just taking men on and like swinging the ball over, but he seemed to have lost the sort of hunger to go do. I don't know if it was belief, or maybe it is just a tactical change, but yeah, like the way he was playing there in midfield, it actually, it helped the forward line a lot more, because he is the one always free, and he's the one finding those men and feeding it on to them.
Yeah, because you remember against Donegal when he got all those crazy stats or crazy possessions and he got man of the match. I wasn't really criticising him then. I criticised him against Kerry and against Mayo, because he continued on that style of play against two teams who let you play. Do you know what I mean? So I'm like, Kieran, right, you're grand against Donegal and against Carlow Saturday night.
Back,
play that hand passing game, because if you try to kick it in like Connolly did a few times, Jesus, you have to have it on the eye of a needle, through the eye of a needle to get it, hit a man. And even if you do hit a man, they'll run out, they'll gather possession, and suddenly there's three men around. So the kicking game doesn't work when a team's that defensive. My criticism of Kilkenny is that he didn't adapt his game when it came to teams that weren't as defensive as that. And he against those teams, he should have been getting the ball and moving it on fast and getting it into the Dublin full forward line.
Taking men on.
Yeah, and taking men on. He wasn't really doing that.
The media, like, we're all sort of guilty of it as well. Like, you know, we find these fads and then we go with them for 2 or 3 years. Like, you know, in soccer at the minute, it's pressing. How well is the team pressing? And now in Gaelic football, it's possessions. And I heard it, like, the Sky Sports commentator say it after about 12 minutes. It was like, Kieran Kilkenny, top of the possession charts again. Like, you know, and that is what everyone's looking at now. And they're looking to see Kilkenny top, no matter what it means. Like, they're just, they see the stat and now they think it's something that we can all talk about, some sort of narrative.
The other one that's driving me up the wall is the possession stats in general.
Or the percentage.
So Carlo had 57% possession. Possession stats mean zero in GAA, lads. Stop this possession stats. Yeah. It's irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant.
Especially the way Carlo were playing. Like, they were holding possession to give themselves a breather and passing along
and going backwards. I think more possession, like, you know what I mean, is actually a bad thing, because if you're recycling it, you're not, you should really be hitting a team on the break and trying to finish the move ASAP. It's not like you're trying to, you know, like soccer where you're Barcelona and you're waiting for the opening. That happens in GAA nowadays, but that's actually not a good thing when that happens. You know what I mean? You want to actually finish the move with a good break.
And if you don't score within, what, 10, 15 seconds tops, I mean, it's not your pattern of play anymore. It's just chaos. There's too many men back.
That's
it. It's just you're sort of going along with it and trying to figure something out as you go.
You have your chance on the break, like I said, and if you don't get that, you're in trouble. You have to recycle it and you're in bother. I thought the kickouts were very interesting, and Stephen O'Mara had a very good piece on the website on Sports Joe today, and he did some looking at the Carlow kickouts. And I was at the game, Conan. It was, I don't know if you could see this on the television, but it was so obvious. Dublin pushed up to a man on the Carlow kickouts. Now, not, this is Donegal 2014 levels of pushing up, right? So, like, I mean, the Carlow tactic was to go long. They're hoping, like, Brendan Murphy catches this ball. I'm not messing. There was 30, 40 yards of space from the midfield, and did one man in the full forward line. Sometimes did no man.
Yeah.
So Dublin had nobody back there, only the man that was marking whoever was in the full forward line. I think it was Broderick. So, like, I mean, the opportunity for Carlow. Carlow did the right thing by going long with their kickouts. Now, they only won 4 out of the 14. Dublin won 10 of them because Dublin are so strong. But then Stephen has a theory on this, where it is because Carlow didn't want to go short and risk the turnover close to their goals, that they drove it over the midfield into a Dublin hand, and all their 13 men were still sitting pretty in their defensive shape. Do you know what I mean? So it actually was a tactic to get the hell as far down the field as possible. He showed a few screenshots where Carlo didn't actually have a chance of winning this kickout. So he said it's either misplaced or this was a tactic. Now, it's very interesting. Turlough O'Brien has since followed him on Twitter and asked Stephen to private mail him.
You miss nothing.
So I don't miss anything. So Steve is actually completely onto something here, or Turlough is saying here, that's a load of nonsense. But it actually does make sense that if they were so worried about keeping the score down, get that ball as far as possible. None of your players are out of position when Dublin win it. And he said his statistics, and this is the most interesting thing, typically Stephen says, my statistical analysis is showing that a side in possession facing a well set up to 12 or 13 strong blanket defence are actually more likely to concede a score on the counter attack upon losing possession than they are to score from their own possession.
Yeah.
So you're looking at this and you're going, right, statistics say if we've got 13 men behind the ball, there's a higher chance of us creating a turnover, breaking down the field and scoring than them scoring. Now, I think Dublin might skew these stats a little bit, but in general. So Carlo, like, let's see what you've got. Let's break it down. Let's try to hit you on the break. So this could have been an obvious tactic from Carlo to drive these kickouts so far over the midfield and have themselves set up.
But...
discuss.
But they didn't score once from a counter-attack. Like, maybe that was the thinking, but I don't think they scored once from a turnover ball and then going end-to-end and putting it over. I think, actually, the stat I read Stephen's piece, I think the interesting stat that caught me was, I think they went short four times and three times they scored from that.
Yeah.
So, surely having possession is very... especially when you're Carlo, like, I mean, you're relying on taking the ball off these Dublin men. That's a risky game.
This is the Mourinho model, though. Mourinho says that Mourinho prefers not to have the ball because you're less likely to make a mistake without it. And he hits the break. This is not unique to what Carlo are doing. This is a theory that's out there. Let the others have it. We'll go so defensive. We'll break them down. Now, Carlo, look, we're talking here now about a Division 4 team. So they're never going to hit Dublin on the break on a regular basis and get a lot of joy out of it. They're just not that good, despite the heroics of Sean Murphy in midfield, who is absolutely outstanding.
Unbelievable.
Not the most natural player. I wouldn't say his football brain is that high, but he's a serious heart, serious speed, and he's a player that the fans absolutely love. Whenever he was near the ball, he made the block down on Dean Rock, and it's like, geez, this lad, if they had another 14 of him, Conan.
Yeah, like, and it was one of the scores, I think, hit with outside his boot, and the fans were jumping crazy like it was a goal he scored. He was like, I don't know, I haven't watched him too much, I don't know much about his footballing brain, but I mean, he's the sort of player that every team needs. I mean, he's just the type of lad, it doesn't matter if he's playing Dublin, if he's playing Wexford, he goes out on a Sunday and just loves playing ball. It's almost like he's released when he goes onto the field. And he was just like... and actually, I think it's Stephen's piece again. We give him a lot of credit here. No wonder Turlock's followed him. But, I mean, like, he identified, like, when Carlo actually went at Dublin, got off the shoulder and drove at them, Dublin were very suspect. And maybe, like, and he makes a point in that piece that maybe that's why Mayo were getting so close to Dublin all the time, because Mayo have so many runners and have no problem running at Dublin. And it's very hard to stop an off the ball runner.
Like, tracking the runners is just horrible. Like, it's a horrible thing. Every player knows having to track a runner and you're not even sure he's going to get the ball.
Yeah.
It's just the most... you have to be an incredibly, incredibly disciplined player. Like, the Tyrone have them, Mayo have them, Dublin have them. These lads have them, Donegal have them. Tracking runners is a horrible job. And that's what a lot of teams are falling down on, that they're putting men behind the ball, but when, like, they just won't track the runners in the middle third because I don't think their manager's pulling them up on it when they don't. I think they're getting away with it and they're falling into this kind of, you know, lazy kind of patterns.
Yeah.
And the teams like Tyrone, Mayo, Dublin, these teams who are mad for hard work, that's when they blow you away.
And it showed in the All-Ireland final with Keegan. I mean, you're talking about somebody like Lee Keegan. If you switch off for 1 second, it's too late. Like, you know, Connolly loses him for a split second and that's it, and Keegan is gone the length of the field and he's straight through on goal and buries it. Like, that's the standard we're dealing with now. You can't afford to sort of take your foot off, I guess. But going back to the kickouts, I mean, it must have been deliberate, because it wasn't a cock-up to keep hitting the ball straight down the middle that far.
But you see, this worked against... this is another thing, like, because, I mean, this is Stephen's theory on it. My theory on it was they were trying to do a Donegal. Like, where... do you remember Donegal did it and Michael Murphy in the second half? Durkin went long, Michael Murphy just added on to it. I think they were looking for Brendan Murphy just to add on to these. And there was a whole acre of space, you know what I mean, for players to run into. So it could be a combination of the both. But, like, I mean, if Dublin continue with this pushing up, and I think they will... Jesus, teams need to go long to midfield. They really, really do.
Will they, or is that just because they were playing Carlo and they thought, let's push you up, we can run with them anyway?
Yeah, well, that's another question, whether they just went, look, we'll get away with this. But I'm pretty sure they put the full court press on Kerry in the league final as well. You know what I mean? They just went, they're not giving away any cheap freeze, and that seems to be a tactic of theirs this year.
Are your eyes lighting up thinking that Dublin can be beaten? Is that what I'm sensing?
Well, I think if they're pushing up all over the field, trying to go short when Dublin have the big push on is madness. Just get it out. And like what Carlo were saying here, you get it out there, even if you lose it out there, you still have You still have your defence. You're not losing anything too much by going long. Drive it down the middle as far as you can. And that's, I think that's the way teams should deal with Dublin.
Isn't this bloody great though? Look how we're talking about Carlow. Like, we're Carlow, for God's sake, and people are saying that they were too defensive. Like, this, they've actually given people a blueprint to play Dublin. Carlow.
Yeah. And that's because they actually started thinking tactically and thinking how to do it. Kamira, what we're going to have to talk about down in Armagh here, we've already touched on it. And we talked to Caelan Mooney as well. It's interesting that, you know, Down have been completely written off. Nobody really gave them a chance against a team who, like, I mean, they were not, it's not like they were playing Tyrone. You could kind of understand that. Like, it was a bit weird that kind of happened. But Down played a smart game against Armagh. Armagh had a very strong wind in the first half. I think Down were the better team right throughout the game. I think that they went into it, they started much better. Armagh came back into it, but did a strong wind with them, and there was only one team in the second half. Like, Armagh weren't at the races in the second half.
No, I think we all got caught up with the goal chances that Armagh had, and it was a brilliant first half to watch.
Great first half,
a neutral, so we were all just very excited. I mean, I think it was telling Joe Brawley's reaction at halftime to Joe Brawley's reaction at full time. I mean, it was like a man beaten down. He was like, he had hope all of a sudden at halftime in that game.
And but it's an aghast that Brawley didn't slam McGeaney or slam Armagh because they played the type of football he wants them to play. You know what I mean? So they got a complete break for being shambolic in second half. If Armagh had been defensive in that second half, the knives would have been out. It would have been Grimley treatment from 4 years ago is what they would have got. But no, Armagh kicked the ball a bit more, so we'll give him complete break for being shambolic because they play the way I want them to play.
He was like, he was waxing lyrical about Moonan in the first half or at half time, and then like come the second half he was sort of questioning why they were kicking it and when Down were so defensive. I don't know exactly what the idea was, but they should have just popped over points. I mean, Armagh were going for points with about, or goals
going for goals,
about 15 minutes.
They went for a few points and they dropped short. Unless that wind got up, because Down played a much smarter game in the first half. There was no kind of long. Armagh were either going for longer. Stephen Campbell had a few that hooked wide left, but they were dropping short. There was a few different drops short. Then they start going for goals. They were all over the place, Armagh. Like, I mean, you couldn't criticise them enough for what they. They were clueless. Clueless.
There was a point where I thought this win must be exceptional, and then when I watched the sort of highlights back after the game, it was like, hang on, like, Down were kicking this freely over, like, what did they get, 9 points in the first half?
9, which you don't get 9 against a really strong wind.
Armagh got 1 from play in, what was it, 45 minutes of football in the end, like, and he got a free. What on earth was Jamie Clark thinking with that free at the end as well?
That was
crazy.
Like, well, there was still play to go after.
But they needed a goal anyway. They were still 2 points down after that. So why not try and work it from 13 yards out rather than taking your chance winning the kick out and then trying to get it back to 13 yards out so you can get the goal? They needed the goal regardless of that point over or not. So I don't get what the thinking was.
One way or another, And you very rarely get goals from dropping it into that square anyways. But Caelan Mooney, O'Hanlon, very good going forward. And when you've got attacking wing backs in that system, a criticism of Down would be playing McKernan. Now, he was put on a shortlist for man of the match last night in the Sunday game. I couldn't believe it. I think McKernan is completely wasted in that role they had him. He never ventured outside his 45. This is a fellow who can kick long range scores, who's brilliant going forward and is a leader. Why are you using a player of that ability as your sweeper? Like, it's not like he was that dominant as a sweeper. Like, I didn't see him. How was he even put in as man of the match? Martin Carney mentions towards the end of the live game, he's been outstanding. What game were you at? He wasn't outstanding. Like, he's wasted. He's completely wasted in there. This is pretty much your best player. It's all right, Colm Kavanagh doing that. Colm Kavanagh is a grafter. McKernan has so much more to his game going forward than Colm Kavanagh. Don't play him as your sweeper. And sometimes he was in behind the full back line. Like, I mean, Jesus, a grand handy role for McKernan. So I think he played it for St Mary's as well. I know he did, actually. He had a good Sigerson final play in that game, but they were against a strong wind, I'm pretty sure, in the second half. You wouldn't mind it as much then. They were kind of grafting out, holding on. But I want to see more from him than what we're seeing out of him.
And you said McKernan's better than Kavanagh going forward, but Kavanagh is also a better sweeper than McKernan is. I mean, Kavanagh is almost perfectly designed for that role where he just mans the gates. Like, McKernan is one of the best attacking midfielders in Ireland. Like, yeah. You know, he's definitely probably the best in Ulster. I saw him rip Patsy Bradley to shreds, and nobody does that. Now, let me tell you, he didn't do it twice. Patsy Bradley got him back in the next game. But, like, you know, that's like, you know, that's the mark of him. That's why I remember McKernan, this marauding number nine. It just keeps going forward and linking play, and he's such a brilliant, like, kick passer and point taker. What is he doing standing 13 yards out against a pretty average attack? Sorry, Stevie.
Yeah. Let's be honest. And Jamie Clark was disappointing too. To be fair, he did one or two nice things in the first half. But like we said, Down went with two sweepers in the second half and went very, very defensive. And they just shut Armagh out. And to Armagh's criticism, the criticism of Armagh here, and we've learned this so many times, you don't break that down. You don't, like, even Dublin can't break Carlow down when they go like that. Like, and then you've Down with the strength in numbers back there. You've got them breaking, you've got them turning over ball. You've Caelan Mooney, you've a Hanlon, you've these fellas, and they're breaking forward. There's the blueprint. It's going on since Donegal in 2011. Yeah. And nobody's an idiot. You're just going to have to play it. You're going to have to think on your feet in the middle of the second half and go, lads, have a call. Like, it's not like you discussed Down might do this. Like, go back to that. Turn it cagey and hope, because it was close at that stage. There was always only a score or two in it. Then Armagh just had to go, listen, that's the way we're going to have to change our style now and play you at your own game.
But is it just me, or are we not a little bit disappointed by Jamie Clark in the game? Like, you know, everyone's probably coming and expecting so much, and he's just named now because of what he's done with Cross McGlenn and that. Like, you know, people want to see Jamie Clark, and obviously he's a brilliant footballer. But I mean, I was watching that game, and I think it was O'Hagan that was marking him, and he was getting pushed and pulled, and boys roaring in his face, and like, even when he wasn't involved in the play, like, if Down had a turnover ball at the other side, he was getting shouldered and again screamed at, and I just never saw a reaction. I wanted him, like, not I didn't want him to turn around and punch anybody, but I want him to go and win the ball with his teeth being bitten and go and put the thing over, turn around and roar back in the face, sort of like McManus and Neil McGee in that Ulster final a couple of years ago. Sort of like, again, I always go back to Derry, but Paddy Bradley and Carl Lacey had a great battle, and there's a brilliant picture of Bradley roaring in his face. You want to see, not temper, but you want to see a bit of aggression from your forwards, like, in the play, go and win the ball and make something happen. I just didn't see it from him.
Yeah, no, I don't think we have. It was Oisín McConville was talking after the game, and he was like saying he doesn't know where Armagh are going to go from here. You know, like, I mean, from Armagh's perspective, it's going to be very hard to regroup from this defeat. This one will have really hurt, as they completely fell away in the second half after looking so dangerous in the first. Like, I mean, you know, McGeaney was talking after the half time, or talking after the match, and I think he was talking to the Irish Times, and he says even the first 10-15 minutes they ran up 4 or 5 points, or so they're saying. He settled well, and or they settled well, and he said we had plenty of opportunities, simple opportunities to put the ball over the bar, but we didn't take them. Gradually we just ran out of time. And this is a similar team with Armagh. Like, I mean, there was a few wides in the first half that were absolutely deplorable with the wind, you know, not good enough. And then you have to wonder, are these lads good enough? You know, are they good enough at this level? Like, this level with a strong wind like that, you don't just score 4 points. Like, I mean, you can talk all you want. This is from an apparently attacking team. 4 points. Like, okay, they had a few goal chances. If you're getting the ball in around the square, you're going to get these half chances for goals. But, like, I mean, you have to be swinging over more than 4 points with a strong wind.
6 scores, regardless of how many goals. It's only 6 scores as well with that sort of...
Yeah.
And the wind never put the ball over the bar for anybody. maybe losing to Downey by 2 points... Is their level? Maybe we shouldn't be too hard on them. Like, they lost by 2 points to a team in the division above them.
Yeah,
is that the perfect?
It's just
facts?
Yeah. Look, I blame Stevie because he had us all. He had all our hopes built up for Armagh. Something about Armagh, you kind of want to see them back in the mix. We all want Armagh because I don't know. I wouldn't say we grew up with it, but we were so used to it for so long that it's weird to see them like they are now.
I wouldn't put me in the same category as growing up with you as well. Like, you know,
well, that's fair enough. Well, I'm a '90s man. When I be harping on for the best football was played in the '90s.
Yeah.
That's when Ulster took over. You should agree with that. That's when Ulster came down and won all Ireland's playing bloody unbelievably good football.
Yeah, like, but you're right in a way. I was going for Armagh yesterday. I have no idea why, and I was finding myself getting frustrated when they weren't doing things that I want them to do. Like, so maybe that's where it is coming from. You want to just see Armagh back at the top.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Right, up next we'll give performance of the weekend.
is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, Conan. I've Caelan Mooney in there. I know we spoke to him earlier on the show. Like, he's any player that has that type of electric pace is exciting. He's a fan's favourite. Jack McCaffrey, Kevin McLaughlin from Mayo. You know these lads that have just blistering pace that can move away from Graham Riley from Meath.
Yeah.
I love players like that. Like, I mean, these are exciting players. And Caelan Mooney, first year ever to play a wing back. That's the place for him in the modern game. Pack your half back line with attacking wing backs. They don't have to be the best defenders in the world. So you've got bloody three or four men back there helping them. Pack your half back line. Pick the most attacking half back line that you can. And this is the way you can get joy.
I think half back's more attacking than half forward now, because like, if you're half forward, you have to track back anyway. You have to get back in defence even if you're not tracking a man. So you're making two runs before you're actually attacking, whereas the halfback is coming from a platform where he can just burst whenever he wants, and he decides everything, basically. He has to do a bit of defending, but his defending's all in the one spot as well. He's not tracking all over the field. And, like, the best thing about Mooney was the game on Sunday when, like, Down were shutting the whole thing down and everybody back, and then he just decides to go on this absolute foray forward. Like, he's nowhere near the ball, but he starts speeding forward, like, and then I don't know who it was that gave it to him. Shouldn't have played the pass to him, but he should have won a free at the end. But because he had come forward with such pace and energy, and the crowd got excited just seeing it, they passed him the ball anyway, and the ref got caught up in momentum and didn't give him the free he should have had.
Yeah, that was it. He shouldn't have given it to him at all. Caelan wasn't true there at all. Like, he was just coming at, but I think if I was on the field and I saw Caelan flying past me at speed, I'm probably going to give it to him, even though it wasn't the right ball. You're right, it should have been a point. You should have just used him maybe as a decoy. So Caelan Mooney is well in the mix for that. Sean Murphy from Carlow, we've mentioned him already. Outstanding display against the All-Ireland champions. He'll watch the video of that for a long time. Well, maybe he won't, actually. I've played well in games that we've lost, and you never actually win. You never actually watch a game that you lose back. What's the point in that? If you play well and you win, you'll watch it maybe 20 times. Yeah. It's a nice feeling. So I don't know what Sean's like, whether he wants to watch you losing by 12 points. I don't know why I'm still talking about this.
I think he definitely wants to lose.
Daniel Flynn from Kildare. He's a player, he went to Australia. He's more noted as a midfielder, wing forward. He's gone in full forward this year. A great finish for his goal. He scored 1-3 in total. It was a Kildare demolition. But he, I think, has a big part to play in the way Kildare have been running up big scores this year. He's a target man. He's not like a massive man or anything, but he's a strong man. He's got that Aussie rules background, and he's got that physique, and he's able to win ball, and he's kind of transformed them into a team that has that out ball and can play a little bit both ways if that's what needs be. And he's a huge addition to that Kildare forward line.
Kildare, maybe it's not an outside bet anymore, but you could definitely see him in the quarter final, can't you? Like, they have a good team, good forward line. Like, you put Flynn with Kelly and McCormack, like, they've exciting talent there.
And Paddy Brophy to come back in the edge of the square. You put Paddy Brophy in beside Daniel Flynn. Like, I mean, that's a trip. That's a double trip. But, like, I mean, the great thing about Daniel Flynn and Paddy Brophy is they're not just big. They're not big lumps.
Yeah, like,
if you like Stevie said here last week, that if you have two big men in there. Oh no, we actually talked about it on the hurling show about having two big target men. But Paddy Brophy and Daniel Flynn aren't just target men.
Yeah.
They just happen to be great footballers that are big men. Do you know what I mean? Paul Geaney, who can win ball in the air if you want, but is just a brilliant player. Kildare do look dangerous, there's no doubt about that. You know, they've got Paul Cribben, Niall Kelly in the half forward line, who are as good as anybody. That's a serious forward line, and of a midfield that can stand with most teams as well in Mulick and Feely. So, like, I mean, Kildare going in the right direction, there's absolutely no doubt about that. There's no doubt whatsoever about it. You know, they've got the players, and the age profile of the team is so young. That's why I'm saying that I'm waiting for the Daniel Flynns and the Paddy Brophys to go from 23, 24 to 27, 28. And then these under-16 teams and minor teams coming up to join them. then I think Kildare can challenge Dublin when Connolly will be gone, when Bernard Brogan will be gone, when Michael Darmacaulay will be gone, when Flynn will be gone, when all these lads are gone, and then you're left with the Conor Callaghans and the Mannions and, you know, the Cormac Costlows, yeah, who are still brilliant players, Niall Scullies, but they're not at the level of the fellas that have. That's when Kildare, that's when the Leinster Championship, yeah, can finally start kicking into life again, Conor. Can't wait, eh?
Connolly will probably be suspended anyway.
Yeah, might get 5 years for this push on the linesman. The winner of performance of the weekend, though, Conor, it can only be one man. It can only be a player that I've loved for a long, long time, because I'm a huge fan of an attacking wing forward. I love a man with pace. I love a scoring wing forward. So when you put pace, scoring wing forward, all that thing, a bit of size, captain of Meath this year, Graham Riley, he got 7 from play. Outstanding stuff. And the gas thing, like, Graham Riley scored 7 from play for, like, he was wearing number 13, but he'd be playing in the half forward line and running on at pace. Mm. Graham Riley has been doing this for the last 7 or 8 years, like, consistently. And consistently, not only against the Leashes and the Louds, against Dublin. Anyone Graham Riley plays against, he's hitting 2 or 3 or 4 from play from wing forward. He's an incredible level of consistency for a half forward. And yesterday he's catching kickouts and he's playing a real leader's role. You know, from catching kickouts and then breaking forward. Now, Loud, I have to give Loud a mention, because Colm Kelly said in his interview after the game, he said, "We went with a sweeper all year." Wait and hear this, Conan. You'll absolutely have a nervous breakdown when you hear this. But I went for actually Loud +5. I thought it was a great bet because I saw Loud against Leash in the league and they were a pretty defensive, yeah, team. So I'm saying Meath aren't that good. You know, Loud +5 would be a smart bet. Colm Kelly says after the game, "We went with a sweeper all year, but we decided to go for it today. We didn't play the sweeper that we've been playing all year. Just conceded 27 points. Colm, why did you do that? Why? I'd just love to know why he would decide against probably the best team they've played. They played Wicklow last. They're in Division 3 all year. So against the best team they've played so far this year, they decided to abandon the sweeper that they've been playing. Like, think about the logic of this. Now, we talked Colm Kelly up a lot earlier on the league, and he's a good attitude towards the game. But that just sounded to me like, what a silly, silly thing to do.
Why? Like, and it's almost like you get a free pass because it's a sweeper. So you say, "We didn't play the sweeper today." He's basically said there, "We've been working on something all year, and then we just didn't bother doing it today." Like, imagine that wasn't a sweeper. Imagine saying, "Yeah, we've been working on kick passing all year,
yeah,
but we decided to do a hand passing game today in the championship, even though we haven't
worked." Or even kickouts. We decided to go short with our kickouts all year, yeah, but we decided to go long today.
But some people say, "Oh, fair play. You know, we didn't do sweeper."
Yeah.
Even though that's what he's been working on. I am going to have a nervous breakdown.
I know, yeah, and conceded 27 points. Because I was watching, I was on Twitter checking the results of that because I'd allowed +5,
yeah,
and Loud kept getting goals to get back into it. I was like, "All right, grand." Then I'm seeing Meade 27 points. How the hell did this happen? 27 points, yeah, in 70 minutes.
And Paddy O'Rourke doing his best to let them in.
That's another thing I wanted to mention quickly, because I got on to Paddy on Twitter. I'd say he hasn't checked his direct messages yet to actually have a call.
That must be what it is. Not that he's not getting back
to you. Find out exactly what the hell happened here, because that was the strangest thing. A quick kick out. Ran back into his goals, obviously. This was off camera. The Loud player, well, it looked like he was just going to clip it over the bar. He wasn't going for a goal. I'd be surprised if he was going for a goal. But then you have a look in the goals and Paddy's stuck in the corner of the net.
Yeah.
And like, what was Paddy doing? It was almost like, did he think... My theory on this is he thought this was just going to be clipped over, so he was in getting his tea for another quick kick out, and it just bounced into the goals. It was a bizarre goal. There's no doubt. The only man that'll know what he was doing was Paddy,
yeah,
and he hasn't checked his DMs. Let's get him on. Maybe we'll get him on Thursday, right, Conor? We may leave it there, and we'll be back on Thursday. We'll be back on Thursday from on Puck On Pub in Galway City Centre, actually, because we're not going to have a podcast early on Thursday. The podcast on Thursday, the preview podcast, will be coming from live from on Puck On Pub. We have a brilliant lineup, including John Mahan, Derek Savage, Pádraig Joyce, Mark O'Shea, Conor Mortimer, and we'll have one more guest as well that I'm still just working on. I'll head off and try and book that now. So we'll see you in the Puck on Thursday night. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.